Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Sexton trying to get loose. He'll fire.
He knocks it down.
But Carl slammed it home. Garland upstairs.
Oh!
Sexton is fine. Oh. A thunderous dunk.
And Allen blocked the shot at the rim.
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast, part of the Cavs Media family. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. Can you believe it? We are officially halfway through this NBA season with the Cavs surpassing last year's win total at the 41-game mark. Support for this podcast and the following message comes from Zoom. 500,000 businesses connect using Zoom, a single platform for phone, chat, workspaces, events, apps, and video. Zoom enables real-time collaboration for teams around the globe. Zoom, how the world connects. And connecting with me now via Zoom is my co-host, Carter Rodriguez. Carter, how you doing, buddy?
Doing good, man. Quarantine. Still quarantining. Still stuck in the house. Pulling you double duty, dadding and working. I'm feeling crazy.
Yeah, I'm not sick, but I have not left the house a whole lot. I am definitely losing my mind a little bit, so I can relate to that entirely. But the good news is we got a lot of Cavs basketball recently. The Cavs just finished a stretch of three games in four nights in three different cities, taking one day off before they do it all over again. But I want to start in the middle, Carter. I want to start with that Warriors game, because I think that was the most significant game probably that we've seen this season for the Cavs. That was a playoff-like atmosphere, and I actually want to start with how you were feeling, because that game brought up a lot of emotions for myself personally, and I just want to know kind of going into it and then after the game kind of what your emotions were there.
I'm not sure if the Cavs are all the way back, but I know the Warriors are because I really hate them again. it's really easy to root against that team. It felt like a warm slash itchy blanket. It felt important. It felt like a measuring stick game for the Cavs. And for the first time this season, really, they didn't really look too up to the task. Yep. It looked like, I don't want to overstate it, because Darius's back was clearly acting up a little bit at the end, and that extended into the Sacramento game. Mm-hmm. And integrating a brand new piece in Rajon Rondo, who actually played quite well, but ultimately, it did feel a little like, here is a high water mark. Can you get there? Can you get to it, Cavs? And they didn't get there. They mm-hmm. looked a little shook. The Warriors were clearly in their head. Darius was seeing ghosts.
Yep.
I think of the pass in the fourth quarter where he just like threw it like nearly out of midcourt, out of bounds. Mm-hmm. Like when no one was there and no one at any point had been there on the possession, they were packing their paint. They were doing that classic Warriors thing, even without Draymond, where they make you just see so many bodies whenever mm-hmm. you have the ball, and you just don't know who's stunting and who's staying, and it creates indecision and it creates bad choices. And the Cavs just looked overwhelmed. I mean, Darius had, I think, the worst game of his last two seasons.
Mm-hmm. I don't remember last year well enough to push back on that, but certainly the worst of this year.
It felt like it, at least. The jumpers for the whole team didn't fall. They lit up any lineup with Laurie and Kevin on the floor at the same time. It was just kind of a, hey, you're not here yet, you're not ready yet kind of game, which is okay. That's what's so funny to me is, and I'm monologuing super hard, I'm sorry. But, you know, like I just feel like people were really, really angry that they lost that game the way they did. And I'm like, well, I always thought it was a pretty good chance that they might. You know, the Warriors, the best team in the league at home in a wildly emotional game. Coming off a two-game losing streak. Like, it was the worst possible spot for the Cavs, and it showed. But, like, it hasn't affected my excitement about the team moving forward. I'll finally pass the baton to you. I'm so sorry.
No problem. Like, I was expecting a bit of a monologue, and the reason that I started asking you how you felt about that game is because I was angry after that game. I found it frustrating. I was in a bad mood going in. I had messaged you privately before the game saying I didn't have a good feeling about it. I felt like it wasn't going to go well, partly due to the fact that it is the Warriors, and they're a really good team, best defense in the league, even without Draymond Green. They have so much length and whatnot. And also just the fact that this is my own paranoia, is whenever I feel like whenever I'm in a really bad mood, the Cavs, they just don't deliver on a performance that cheers me up.
And it is about you.
It is 100% about me. And what caused me to kind of reflect after the game, because I was sitting there and I was angry. And of course, like, you have people in the Discord that are upset. You have in my Twitter mentions and whatnot, people being upset. And I was sitting there and I was grumpy. I'm like, you guys are reacting too much to one game, as I'm sitting at home getting too angry myself. And I was like, you know what? This is part of the experience, right? Like, this is just kind of human emotions. It's dumb. But you know what? Like, this is part of it. This is a team that we found really frustrating to play against for many, many years. An annoying fan base. A game, the first time that the Cavs are really getting that kind of attention and that kind of spotlight. And they don't play well, right?
That was a big part of it for me. Was the spotlight. I wanted the Cavs to show the basketball community what we'd been seeing all year.
And especially when you come from a standpoint of the last couple of years, we've been fighting a lot of narratives about this team, right? Like that the core sucks, that they can't, any numbers that they're putting up, it doesn't have to do with winning and whatnot. So when they go onto a stage like that, you want to see them perform well, because you're trying to show your friends and families that might be tuning in for the first time, or casual fans that you interact with. You want them to play well. And I think that's a really kind of natural feeling. And as more time has kind of passed, I've sat here and I've reflected on why I was so frustrated. I think part of it too was I was frustrated seeing Klay coming back. Even though I love Klay Thompson as a player, I'm frustrated seeing Klay come back and that good feel good while the Cavs have so many guys out. Like, I wanted Colin Sexton to be part of this year. He's not. That really, really frustrates me. Every now and then that kind of sinks in where I'm like, I was right about so many different players the last couple of years, and we didn't get a chance to be right about Colin and how he could fit into a winning situation. So I think it's a very normal thing, and it was also a very human game, because in a lot of ways, that was their first taste of a playoff experience. That was a crazy atmosphere. You hear Steve Kerr talk about it after, saying the only thing he could compare it to, like the energy in the arena and whatnot, was when Michael Jordan returned. You heard Klay Thompson say that getting out there playing in that game, it was very close to winning a championship in terms of how it felt for him to come back. That was a team that was fully, fully bought in. They were treating it like a playoff game. They were playing with that level of intensity. And I think it's actually a healthy reminder that there is still a learning curve with the Cavs. Like, there is another gear that comes with playoff basketball and playing elite teams of that caliber. And that's going to take some time. Like, there's a lot of takeaways from there. It's not something to be alarmed about. It's just reality. Like, as ahead of schedule as they are, there is still work ahead of them.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, man. And really, they probably have two more gears to get to before they get to that level, you know? And that just shows you how crazy it is to be a championship quality team.
Like, even in a playoff series, you can have games, like, we've seen it, like, series where the Cavs won, they will lose a game by 30 because they just don't come out with the right energy and whatnot. And, like, some of it is personnel, right? Like, what the Warriors are able to do to Darius Garland without other ball handlers being on the floor, you wouldn't be able to do that if there was the personnel. If Colin Sexton was there, it was going to draw more attention. But at the same time, there is stuff that Darius needs to learn from this kind of an experience, right? Like, with Andrew Wiggins being on him, great defender, probably deserves a lot of all-star consideration this year and might even make
it. Man, he was good defensively. He was never that fundamental defensively in his career.
He was really good defensively. You had stretches where the Warriors were throwing a box and one. They really scouted. Like, the entire intention, you could tell, was to take away kind of the bread and butter that Darius did, because they had a look at him before when they were playing in Cleveland, right? And even when he's throwing a lob, you have one guy going vertical between whoever the lob threat was, between them and the basket. You had another one going vertical to break up the pass. And even if that pass got in, it's so congested that Jared Allen or Evan Mobley had to kick it out. Like, there are going to be times where Darius Garland gets defended like this. And it's part of his growth and part of, like, figuring out how to win, to learn what to do in those situations. What adjustments you need to make? Do you need to, okay, I understand that they're going to trap me a lot, so I need to create an isolation against a very good defender in Andrew Wiggins. Like, that is part of the learning curve for Darius Garland and part of the next step that this team needs to make.
Yeah, there's a difference between fringe all-star and no doubt all-star. And it's being kind of matchup proof, or, you know, something approaching matchup proof, you know, I thought he looked lost offensively. Mm-hmm. You know, it wasn't just, you know, the physicality. It was the having to make all the reads and kind of seeing through all these trees. And the reality is, yeah, we know the Cavs need a big wing playmaker. And a lot of that stuff kind of gets cleared up, and he gets to just kind of attack a little bit more selectively, as opposed to being the core engine. And even just not having Ricky out there, you know, is different, because, like, we're going to get to our Rondo thoughts later, but there's the way people kind of didn't guard Ricky, and there's people really don't guard Rondo.
Yeah.
And that is a difference. And, you know, so, like, I just think, like, ultimately, if you want Darius to kind of hit the ceiling that you've kind of prescribed for him, it's like, hey, you got to be able to kind of operate amongst the trees, because if the solution is put tall athlete on me, like, every playoff team that the Cavs could possibly face will have that option.
Mm-hmm.
Even play-in teams will have that option for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
So he's going to have to learn how to kill those mismatches if he's going to be a true bona fide star. And sure, the Cavs roster did him no favors. I mean, Mobley looked like a rookie out there. In a major way.
The first time that he really looked like a rookie this season, in my opinion, like, he kind of got lost a few times. And, like, that's the thing about the way the Warriors play. Like, there is so much ball movement at all times, and they play with a different level of physicality. Like, the Warriors are back, and so is the whistle that they get. And I'm not saying that in an unfair call way. I'm saying that is the way that the officials were letting the game be played. Lamar Stevens early in the game got clipped by a moving screen and dropped to the ground, and he's kind of looking like, oh, what the heck's going on? We know from experience.
That's how we know the Warriors are back.
Right. We know that
they're
the Warriors
away
are back.
They're getting illegal screens again.
But in the past, the Cavs, those veteran Cavs teams, they responded with physicality of their own. They beat the hell out of Steph, right? Like, they were out there battling. Tristan Thompson getting his body into guys, like, making them kind of sweat it physically. And the Cavs just weren't kind of up to that task. They weren't expecting it. It seemed like they came into it kind of expecting a regular season game, and that was a playoff-like atmosphere. And one of the big things for Garland, too, and I really do appreciate the fact that he is defending opposing point guards, but the reality is, when you're guarding someone that moves as much as Steph Curry on the offensive end, like, that takes a lot out of a guy. And I tweeted at the beginning of the game, but if Garland is going to be that guy that chases Steph around all game while also being the only player that creates offensively, like, that requires a different level of conditioning than we really see, like, out of any point guard in the league. And unfortunately, the Cavs don't have the luxury of throwing a small forward at this time on Steph Curry and moving Garland over to Clay or something like that, because Lauri Markkanen is starting at small forward. That's not an option. Lamar Stevens is not quick enough to stay with Steph. And I appreciate Garland accepting the challenge. I appreciate Garland accepting the challenge, but the reality is, like, it's going to require like a bit of kind of some rough moments if he's going to chase around all these elite point guards all the time and be the one engine offensively. Like, you can get there, but that's a lot to ask of a guy. And I think some of that is what we're seeing in the fourth quarters, where his shooting percentage has gone down. Like, you can tell he gets a little bit tired, and it probably doesn't help the fact that he opened up about, hey, I had trouble kind of getting my breathing back and my conditioning back after COVID. Like, he clearly went through some symptoms, and your first three games and four night stretch after that, when you're kind of fresh back from protocols, probably didn't help. But even without those qualifiers, like, I really do think that that's going to have to be something that they understand, is if you're going to take on that kind of a responsibility, that requires a different level of off-season training and preparation. It's one thing to work against Robert Covington in workouts in summer and whatnot, the training that he does in the off-season. Like, it's all impressive, but it's a different level when you're chasing around Steph Curry for 36 minutes while also facing a very, very physical and long Warriors defense.
And this isn't unique to Darius or any of the young Cavs. I mean, I think it's probably fair to say that this team mostly, I mean, I'm sure they all work very hard on their bodies and, you know, but I think they probably mostly get by on being young.
Yeah.
And having young lungs and stuff like that. And like, every single great player or even decent player gets the playoffs, tends to get their butt kicked, realizes, oh, I'm not as good as I thought I was.
Yep. Or and like, I need to get to a different level of consistency or conditioning. Yeah. Like, LeBron's
Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
Like, famously was like, I got to get in the weight room.
Exactly.
The Pistons are beating the hell out of me. So, like, you know, I think that the games like this are total lessons for guys like Darius. They're lessons for guys like Mobley. Can I complain about Twitter.com, Justin?
Maybe
just a little bit.
I might
just
check a little you on bit. It. I might check you on it. Go ahead.
The rebounding.
Okay.
I think people just are fundamentally misunderstanding what it is to be a defensive rebounder. Mm-hmm. You know, I feel like everyone becomes one of my uncles on Twitter.com every time the Cavs give up a board. Like, I got three 7-footers. Why ain't they getting the boards? And it's like, none of my uncles talk like that. But like, you know, I just feel like it's a real lack of nuanced understanding of what it means to play a team like the Warriors. The Cavs are not a good defensive rebounding team. Mm-hmm. We know this. But they're not, like, horrific. I think they were 16th last I checked a week or two ago.
Yeah.
They're probably a little worse after the last couple games. But this idea of it's an effort thing, it's not, you know, it's an embarrassment. You know, they need to try harder. I'm like, I think they were trying plenty hard. I think they had no legs on them because they were chasing the Warriors around like freaking crazy, and mm-hmm. Kevon Looney beat them to the spot every single time because their defense is, the Warriors bend your defense so out of whack that when a dude with a really strong base like Looney, who none of the Cavs bigs have a base like that, you know, like that, none of them are natural Charles Barkley shaped rebounders, you know, all of them have kind of high centers of gravity. They grab boards by, you know, being in the right spot and using their length. Mm-hmm. So when you're not in the right spot, a team like the Warriors are just going to kill you. And sometimes it's not your choice to be in the right spot. Sometimes you have to go step that extra step out to blow up a split cut. And then all of a sudden the shot's up and you're nowhere near where you'd be against a normal team. So like, I just think, like, if you're grumpy with the Cavs rebounding, that's fine. I was too. But like, this reductionist, it's an effort thing. Like, yeah, I guess some of it is, and it's definitely a focus thing.
Yep.
But like, I think a lot of times it is much more of a, it should be their focus should be criticized much more than their effort. I thought they were working their asses off against the Warriors.
Well, they played legitimately good defense, and I think you touched on a lot of smart points there when it comes to kind of just how much the Warriors get you scrambling. And when you do have 3 7-footers out there and one of them's chasing on the perimeter and Evan Mobley sometimes out of position, like, I appreciated Jarrett Allen trying to put it all on himself, but the reality is that's not the case, right? Like, it's guys moving, everyone's getting guys out of position. They really do a great job of compromising your defense, and that impacts your defensive rebounding position, because for the most part, the Cavs defensive rebounding comes down to, okay, we're just going to kind of box out our guys, we're going to contain everybody, and we'll be able to secure the rebound, right? But when you have 6'8 wings like Andrew Wiggins and Otto Porter Jr. and Jordan Poole, and even Steph Curry's a good rebounder for a guard as well, like, it is going to put you in a difficult position. And it's one of those things where I think some of it comes down to personnel as well. Like, I think that's a really tough game and a tough spot to put Lauri Markkanen in. I think you're seeing more and more times where the three big lineup can be exposed against a team that really pushes in transition, or a team that has this level of movement. And the unique thing about the Warriors is, like, teams can try to replicate this type of movement, but the amount of skill, IQ, just basketball know-how, experience that the Warriors have, like, it really is another level. And I want to
take a dig at our friend Sam and Andy.
Okay.
Who spent just years, and really haven't stopped, relentlessly attacking Kerr for being this, like, doctrinarian, like,
yeah,
unflexible, like, not running any pick and roll. And what's so funny to me is this roster for this team the last couple of years has been full of the kind of players that aren't Steve Kerr players.
Yeah.
Not exactly like a guy like Kelly Oubre, who is like a straight bucket getter, like, has never shown exemplary feel for the game. And, like, maybe it's Steve Kerr's fault for, like, not, like, bending his system. But it's like, you look at, they just get some smart dudes like Bielica. Bielica, Jesus. Sorry. And Otto Porter, and, like, just dudes who know how to play basketball and cut off ball.
Bringing
and
Iggy cut back. Move.
Yeah, Iggy back. And it's like, oh, yeah, there it's the freaking, it's the thing from Hook. There you are, Peter.
Yeah.
Like, I think they deserve to be yelled at by their listener base a little more for all this anti-Kerr riling, when it's like, this dude, his system works so well. You just need the right dudes to play in it. And then they shred everybody.
Yep. And I think sometimes we forget that just because the Warriors fans can be kind of soft and annoying and they get under your skin and whatnot, this is not a soft team. Like, this is a super physical team. And every single time a shot went up, it was a rugby match. And the Cavs just weren't ready for that level of intensity. And you know what? Like, that's kind of fine. Like, that can happen. I think, with the game becoming more accessible, with things like the trade machine and all the knowledge that we have at our disposal as fans, which obviously the teams have more, but it's a lot and we feel connected. I think sometimes we look at every single game and we're like, okay, what's the missing puzzle piece and whatnot? When the reality is, when you have a bunch of young guys like this, it's not about missing puzzle pieces, because these guys are still moldable. Like, they are still, like, someone like Darius Garland, his game is very much clay. Like, you can still play with it. You can, not Clay Thompson, like clay as in molding clay. Like, you can kind of make changes and adjustments and growth, right? Like, there's still so much growth that can happen internally here, but I think it's a really, really important reminder. And, like, there are guards that have more weapons at their disposal around them. Like, even Steph Curry, when Klay went down against the Raptors, like, all of a sudden you're getting that box in one, and you have a front court playmaker like Draymond Green, but it's disruptive. Even with experience, that kind of defensive attention and putting that kind of length on a small guard can have a huge impact. And that's one of those spots where you really miss Colin Sexton, because you cannot give that kind of defensive attention when Colin's out there. You miss Ricky Rubio. You miss the holes in the roster that existed before those guys went down, right? Like, and it's an unfortunate thing, but I think it's a really, really healthy reminder of still what the next steps are. The fact that when we do get to the playoffs, because now we're at this halfway point, you're probably going to see moments where these guys don't rise up to the occasion, where maybe some of their shortcomings or places that they need to add to their game become exposed. That's not something that needs to trigger fire alarms or anything like that. But I think it is healthy to acknowledge. And I actually kind of, once I got over the anger and the frustration, because I just wanted to feel good on that evening, it's something that I kind of appreciated, that reality check.
Yeah, I did too. And it's worth reminding ourselves as we grumble about the way that the defense flustered the 2021-22 Cleveland Cavaliers, that in the 2016 finals, the Cavs with Kyrie Irving and LeBron James and peak Kevin Love and peak Tristan Thompson and still very, very, very helpful mid to late career J.R. Smith scored 89 points, 77 points, 97 points, 93 points in that 7-game series. Like,
yeah.
This team still has that DNA. You could even argue some of their personnel is even better defensively now than it was then.
Yeah.
I mean, Gary Payton II, my God,
yep.
What a menace. Iggy remains a freaking menace. Wiggins, Porter, like, they've got so much switchability and so much foot speed. Yeah, they're awesome. So, like, you know, I just think it was a good reality check. It was certainly a disappointing loss because I think we all wanted them to announce themselves to the NBA audience. Maybe not play.
I would have loved
to play spoiler.
I wanted spoiler. I wanted it to be Paul Pierce's jersey retirement. But the reality is, this is a different situation. That Paul Pierce game, nobody on that team played with Paul Pierce. There was no connection. This time, you have guys that this meant the absolute world to them. They wanted to come out. They want to make a good impression. You have guys like Juan Toscano-Anderson, who's a tremendous player and has been with the Warriors for 3 years, but has never played with Klay Thompson. He wants to make a good first impression. Like, they all came to the arena wearing his jersey. I was listening to a podcast earlier where they were talking about Steph being in the locker room, and he thought the game had started because in warmups, the crowd was going that nuts and getting that loud when Klay Thompson was making jumpers. There is no way to prepare for that kind of environment until you're in it. And it's not a surprise to me that the young guys kind of look shell-shocked, that they looked gassed and out of sorts and a little overwhelmed by the moment. You would expect that. That's completely normal. It's just frustrating as hell, especially when it happens to that team and you get all those old emotions coming back. You have to kind of accept that. You know what? Like, it's okay that I got a little irrationally angry, because at the end of the day, like, this is sports. This is all stupid. This is all escapism. And sometimes this is the other side of that coin, right? Like, that was, I don't know if you saw this, Carter, that was the most watched NBA TV game since 2016.
Wow. That's crazy.
That's a big stage.
It's a real lesson that the league should be putting the Cavs on national TV more. Am I right?
The league is better when the Cavs are good, baby.
I want to pivot over to the Kings game and use Joe's message in the chat as our bridge there. Joe Collar, dear friend of the pod, asks, would you say that the Kings win was the kind of team win that carries you through a long road trip? Because it was not a pretty win.
Man, it was not a pretty win. And my God, some of the shot making that the Kings had in that game. Like, I talked about the situation and I was grumbling about that game on the podcast earlier last week about this being third game, four nights, again, that situation against the Kings. But the Kings were in the same exact situation. They even had the three cities for each of those games. And yet they came out there and just made shots. And sometimes that can be the great equalizer. It's the one kind of variance thing that you can't control with those three-point shots. But you know what? Like, it's funny because we ascribe so much meaning to that final result, and it really comes down to whether or not De'Aaron Fox makes or misses that shot. Like, you can say, oh, this represents Cavs toughness, or if the shot went down, it's, oh, they're not closers. All those narratives can come out of one field goal attempt. But you know what? I really do think that, at least from a morale standpoint, it feels good to bounce back and get that win. Like, this is 100% the war of attrition part of the NBA schedule. Like, you saw the Nets. Who did the Nets? Nets lost to Portland without Norman Powell, without Dame, without CJ, the same Portland that the Cavs just beat. The Detroit Pistons beat the Utah Jazz with Donovan Mitchell and Mike Conley. Rudy Gobert, of course, out. But you know what? Like, these weird games happen. There is so much fatigue. There's wear and tear. Guys in and out of the lineup with COVID and whatnot. I think it's really important to just get a win there, because this is a really difficult road schedule. This is the last kind of trip like this that the Cavs have this season. And to get your second win through the first three games, like, I'm happy coming out of this road trip with a 500 record in it. Like, that's my goal and expectation, and they are well on their way to do that.
I was thinking about this last three games that I've that we watched. And I don't know about you, but I thought this is probably the first stretch of several games in a row without, you know, that in not caused by injury or COVID, that I just don't think the Cavs played very well.
Yep, I agree.
Which, you know, like, I don't think that, I think they've lost maybe a little bit of charge. Maybe they're hitting a little bit of a mid-season, you know, meh vibe, you know,
malaise.
Where they just kind of malaise, that's the word. And like, they were maybe there's been a little lack of sharpness, a little less celebration and fun, you know. And I think that every season's gonna have that. If you thought this whole season was gonna be a party where they didn't have any bad runs, like, welcome to NBA basketball. I'm Carter, let me tell you all about it. Like, I think that, and then I thought, okay, well, I don't think they're playing very well. And they're 2-1 in their last three. Like, this is I think the sloppiest they've played. I think it's the least inspired they've looked. I thought Mobley hasn't looked particularly good the last couple games. They've gotten their butts kicked on the boards, and they're 2-1. So, you know, it continues to be pretty exciting that they're kind of at all these spots where normally, like, you know, these are the kind of stretches that can kind of take a team out of it. You know, the Cavs had a couple of these stretches where, I mean, you remember last year, they were in the playoff hunt, or the play-in hunt, sorry, and then they lost, like, 8 of 10, you know?
Yep.
And some of that was injuries, but, you know, sometimes teams just don't meet the moment. And, like, I think Joe is very, very right in saying, like, sometimes you got to steal some wins.
Yeah.
You know, the Blazers game was way closer than a 13-point game.
Yep. Yeah, thank God for Darius at the end of that one. Like, he made some big time winning plays, and I actually, like, I respected the game against Sacramento a lot as well, because you could tell, like, his back was bothering him. I don't think the back was actually an issue against the Warriors. I think that happened very late in that game. But you look at that Sacramento game, and even on, like, the layup finishes, you could tell he's kind of grabbing his back. He looked stiff as he was moving around out there. But he had, like, those four turnovers that he had on the night. Those all came in, like, the first three quarters. And after that, he was finding ways to kind of play through the pain, understanding his limitations, picking his spots of, okay, I know I can finish here. I know I can get to the rim, or I know I can get a clean shot up. So I'm going to take that shot at this time, even if it's kind of bothering my back and whatnot. And for him to kind of find those ways to grit through and whatnot, that's important. Because, like, even the game against the Warriors, where I was talking about, okay, he's going to need to learn how to kind of capitalize in those situations. You're not going to win a playoff series if Darius is the only creator and he's got to create one-on-one and make those shots. You need to have more personnel. You need to have more guys that can initiate the offense and open up opportunities for him that way. That's how the Warriors get Steph going when he's going, when teams are doing that to him defensively. But you do still need to learn how to do that on some possessions, because that might be what a fourth quarter possession comes down to, where everything gets blown up and you just have to create against a good defender. Like, that's stuff that he is going to have to learn. And sometimes you're going to need to learn how to play through injuries, unless you're Steph Curry. Then you can just kind of accept the, you know, if you lose, you can just blame it on that. But, like, you need to learn how to play through injuries. You need to learn how to play through situations where we don't have another creator, so I need to do this. And I think that's really valuable experience for him to have.
Yeah, I agree. I thought this, I think it was a really important game for them to win, even if it didn't taste super, the medicine didn't taste super good going down. I think that They just have to kind of grit and bear through some of these runs. I thought Darius closed the game really, really well. And, you know, I thought, you know, Laurie finally got a little bit of something going, you know, which we can talk about Laurie.
I was going to say, like, Lauri Markkanen going out there and hitting big shots in the fourth quarter, like, that really probably helps. Like, when you're talking about...
Oh, Justin, we got breaking news, my friend.
What's that?
Adrian Wojnarowski, ESPN sources, Cleveland Cavaliers general manager Kobe Altman has agreed to a contract extension through the 27-28 season. Altman's new title will be president of basketball operations. Man's got an extension and a promotion.
Mm. And we are just coming up on the 2 year or the 1 year anniversary of the Jared Allen trade. That's coming up on the 13th. Obviously, that's going to need to be confirmed by the Cavs and whatnot. But that's pretty damn exciting news. I'm going to make a little bit of an executive decision on that one and say that I'll save my thoughts for it for next podcast, because we are going to be going on Thursday. But that's exciting. I mean, I'd like
to see it. I think we'll gather our thoughts and be smart.
Mm-hmm. smart and responsible.
As opposed to gut reaction. But the gut reaction is that Kobe, you know, enough has gone right with Kobe that this makes a lot of sense. I like that he and JB's times seem to be aligned. I would say that.
I mean, Kobe was already the first general manager to receive an extension under Dan Gilbert. And this is now, I guess, the second. So I'm really happy, because, like, you look back at last year, and I think the consensus that we had was just give at least one more year. Like, let's see this plan through. Because I think too often when you see kind of team building situations kind of go astray and whatnot in the middle of a rebuild, it's not seeing a vision through to the end, right? Like, kind of panicking and not having the stomach to go through with it. So absolutely feels like a deserved extension for Kobe. We'll wait for more confirmation and get details on exactly what all that entails. But I do think going
to... He'll probably come on the pod to talk about...
Yeah, honestly, come on the pod, Kobe.
We'll see, I
want to talk about Lauri because I do think... or Lowry. I'm trying to drill myself because I've noticed that I've been pronouncing it wrong. I'm trying to pronounce him properly. So Lauri Markkanen, I think him hitting those shots is big, but I do think that there's some things that we've been seeing lately with his play that, at least in certain matchups, like when you are playing a team like the Warriors that makes you run, or even the Kings, like what they're able to do with Buddy Hield, Tyrese Haliburton, Harrison Barnes, kind of the off-ball movement and the shooting threat, I kind of want to see a little bit more Dean Wade minutes, even if it's just to keep Lowry more fresh. Like, I really do think that you're starting to see some fatigue from always playing at small forward, and it might be a matchup-dependent thing. Like, when teams are kind of playing more of a half-court game and whatnot, I think there's a lot of value that he can bring to the table, and he has been still trying to contribute in those other areas. But I would like to see just a little bit more minutes for Dean Wade at the three, especially when you're looking at kind of the wear and tear and the fatigue of a season. I think Dean has earned it, and I think you get more production out of Lowry in those spots, because even like Kevin Love, we've seen, like, on nights where you have it going, you will earn more minutes. On nights where you don't, we're going to try to keep you as fresh as possible and get the most out of you in the minutes that you do play. And I think there is an opportunity, especially as this team gets healthier, to maybe play Dean Wade a few more minutes at the three and just keep Lowry more fresh.
Buddy,
it's tough.
Good
it's
luck.
Tough. I'm working
I do
want to.
I do think we should just discuss first kind of what Lowry's been as of late for the team.
Mm-hmm.
They made a big bet on him. He is the return for Larry Nance. Obviously, we found out through Larry's kind of thank you letter that he was looking to leave. And, you know, I think the Cavs did, you know, it's not like they were dealing from a position of super strength, mm-hmm. In terms of kind of moving on from Larry, but he was the prize. And in his last 13 games, he's shooting 20% from three, and he's shooting 38% from the field. He's averaging 13-6 per 36. It's not enough. It's not going to get it done.
Mm-hmm.
What I will take exception to is a few times now, including some of my old Chicago buddies, when I have tweeted some, you know, some minor criticisms of Lauri here and there, they'll say, well, this is who he always was. And I'm like, no, he wasn't. Like, you know, like, I don't buy that. Like, the book on Lowry was that he was just a shooter.
Mm-hmm.
And unless he was making shots, he was useless out there. And I don't think that's been the case. I think he has managed to be a part of helpful lineups, despite the fact that he is shooting by a country mile, his worst percentages of his career.
Yeah.
Prior to this season, the worst he ever shot was from three was 34%. Mm-hmm. I would kill for 34% right now.
Yep.
So, you know, like I think that like there's a lot of noise up from folks that are saying, hey, you got to pull the plug on all these minutes. And maybe you do in the sense of like he's been playing 30 plus a lot of nights lately. And maybe you do break that up a little bit more, a few more minutes to Stevens, a few more minutes to Wade.
Yeah.
I mean, just in the last five games, he's played 34, 36, 33, 29, and 33. So maybe you do start breaking it up because I think it is hurting the offense right now, especially post injury to Rubio, where it's like, okay, we need a little more offensive juice out of that position now than we did. But with that said, like, I also just kind of reject the idea that, like, this is who he is, because it's not. No. There's no evidence to suggest it.
This is a totally unique situation. Like, I think what we're seeing, especially on those threes, like, you can tell that he's not getting the same kind of lift on his jump shot that he was getting earlier in the season. I think what we're seeing is his shooting and his offensive performance regressing because of the effort that he's trying to give in other areas. And that's something totally unique to his time with the Cavs. And that's why I'm kind of advocating for, you know, like, let's maybe not kind of automatically give him 30 minutes, because I do appreciate the effort he's giving and whatnot. And I think they still need the threat of his spacing and whatnot, because I mean, defenses still react differently to him being out there than even Dean Wade, who's shooting better this season. But at the end of the day, like I do think you probably want to keep him in a spot where it's like, hey, we appreciate the effort that you're giving and whatnot, but we're going to put you in a role where you're getting maybe 24, 25 minutes a night guaranteed, because you're still an important part of this rotation. But on nights where you don't have it, we're going to give Dean more opportunities. We're going to try to keep you fresh and get more production out of those 25 minutes with you. And I don't think there's anything unreasonable about that. I think it's a similar role to even... Not, I shouldn't say similar role, but similar to what we saw with Sexton earlier this year, right? Like, there was a change in what he was being asked to do. The usage was still high. He'd still go out there and score. But on nights where he wasn't scoring, you'd go with another option. Like, you would go give Ricky some more opportunities, or maybe a Coral. Like, whoever's playing well, whoever's getting that opportunity, just having a little bit more balance and going a little bit deeper in the rotation. Because especially when you look at the injuries that this team has had, like, you're going to need to rely on some of this depth. I know the depth has been impacted by the injuries, but just give these guys the reps, give them the opportunities. Someone like Dylan Windler, who's played a little bit better recently, shown some signs of life. That's nice, but especially when you have Dean Wade that has played so well this year and kind of, I think, deserves the opportunity, I'd give him the nod right now. Not to start or anything like that, but just kind of guaranteeing him more minutes on a nightly basis.
Yeah, I agree. I think Wade's earned the minutes anyway. You know, I just feel like if anyone's going to, in general, I just wouldn't mind to see everyone on the Cavs starting lineup start at minutes just go down 2-3 minutes a game.
Mm-hmm.
And if those are going to just get evenly dispersed, Dylan's been getting quite a bit of run lately. That's been pretty fun. Mm-hmm. I think he's been playing a lot better. I think even against the Warriors, he played a better game.
We're coming up on 2 weeks for Okoro, so hopefully he'll be coming back soon. Keeping my fingers crossed about that.
Yeah. So really, you just need to kind of spell some of those minutes at the three, and maybe it's just some of Laurie's minutes at the four that you just end up giving to Dean Wade. But I think both of them are just as capable in that spot. And I just think Dean's been too good this season for him to be out of the rotation. I don't think that's representative of the minutes he's given the team. And I just would like to see him back on the court.
I'll push back a little bit because I don't know if I'd give Dean any of Laurie's minutes at the four. I think I would be pretty much just giving him the minutes at the three, because I think when you look at Markkanen where he's really getting tired, it's chasing guys around at the three.
It's playing
on the wing. And just kind of reducing those minutes a little bit. I think it's by necessity with the starting lineup. But as the staggering goes around and you have Jetty Osman in or you have Kevin Love, or not really playing with Kevin Love. I'm still not a big fan of that. But like when you have Jetty in and you have some of the other spacers that come in off the bench, I do think that there's an opportunity to play Dean Wade or to keep him at the four. I don't think it's as necessary for him to play at the three. So I think I would try to give Dean the minutes at the three because I just think he's got better mobility too, right? Like I think
he does. No doubt about it.
Yeah, he's a better defender at the small four position, but it is nice to see some of these guys step up. Like it's nice that an undrafted player like Dean Wade is a valid option. It's nice that Lamar Stevens is playing really well.
Lamar was so good against Golden State. I was so proud of him.
And some of that is they're trapping the hell and really overcommitting on Garland and whatnot. But earlier in the season, like he was missing wide open opportunities. Like I think back to that game against the Clippers, and there were people jumping in the mentions being like, they got to cut this guy. Like there's got to be someone else that you can give these looks to. And we've had those stretches from a couple players now. Like Okoro, when he was playing really poorly, there was a lack of patience there. There was a lack of patience with Stevens when he wasn't playing well. And I do think you're seeing that with Markin and now where he's not hitting the jump shots and people get frustrated. And some of that might just be the accelerated expectations. Some of that might be, hey, you traded a fan favorite player and signed him in a sign and trade deal. So you have some baggage there like people had with Colin Sexton and Kyrie Irving, right? Like these kind of natural human inclinations and emotions that come up in these situations, I can understand them. But I do think that, like, this is why larger sample sizes exist. Like, I don't think Lauri Markkanen forgot how to shoot. I just think right now, because of what he's being asked to do outside of his traditional offensive role, is kind of sapping a little bit of that juice from his offensive game. And there are adjustments that you can make to help mitigate that.
And also, when you're slumping, sometimes the worst thing you can do is get, like, benched because you just get in your head. But, like,
oh yeah,
I think this is great. This is a great middle ground to me where you just say, hey, Lauri, like, hey, we know you're kind of going through it right now on the offensive end. Like, we got eyes. We can see it. We want to put you in some lower stakes situations. Give you, you know, like not need you to be a knockdown shooter for 35 minutes a night.
Yeah.
And just kind of make the game a little easier on him again. I think that's what, if I'm this coaching staff, that's what I'm considering doing as he kind of works his way through this slump. Again, this ain't who he is. There's no evidence to suggest this. He is a 20% 3-point shooter. Like, come on, guys. So I'm rooting for him to get out of it. But I also want to talk about another member of this Cavs team that is new, and that's Rondo. What have your early impressions of Rajon Rondo been?
I don't think it's changed a whole lot from kind of my first impressions or my thoughts when he came to the team. Like he's brought kind of what I expected, like maybe a little bit more looking for his own shot than I would have expected. But for the most part, like he's out there. He runs the offense. He gives them a little bit of juice off the bench. I think the minutes that he's played with Darius are pretty limited. I'd like to see it in more normal circumstances and whatnot, but I've been mostly happy with it. I know you got a little bit more of a Rondo take, so I'll clear out and let you go for it.
I think with Rondo in these early games, I think we've seen all the stuff we're going to love about him and all the stuff that's going to drive us a little bit crazy. And I find it really interesting. Like, I think the first thing that jumps out to me in terms of challenges is there is a huge difference between how teams defended Ricky Rubio and how they defend Rajon Rondo. They leave him wider than wide open when he's on the ball. A little less so when he's off the ball. I think people understand he's a better catch and shoot 3-point shooter at this point in his career.
When he's got time, the jumper is not bad.
Yeah, but on ball, it is... Like, it is, they are a mile off of him, and I think there's some interesting things they can do. Not to put on my coach's cap too hard, but one thing I would love to see are some inverted dribble handoffs with Kevin Love's man. They've got some bigs who can space and handle and shoot, and like if Rondo's guy is going to hang this far off of him, just use him as a functional screener with the ball in his hands and generate some advantages that way. So that certainly jumped out to me. Transition defense has jumped out to me as something that's going to be a challenge, because we saw Ricky kind of take risks, but they were like a lot more calculated risk on the defensive end when he tried to strip someone.
Yeah,
Rajon will take some lazy risks, like kind of swiping at a recently defensively rebounded ball that he has very little chance of getting, and then kind of just picking up that guy and forcing the Cavs into a needless switch to start possessions, like stuff like that. But what I did like is in a game like the Warriors game, which like, hey, focus up, buddy. He didn't do any of that lazy stuff. But I do think we're going to see some shortcut taking from him on defense and in transition where you go, okay, that's going to make me mad. Yeah. Cause Rubio is like the fundamentals king defensively, you know? And I think Rondo's going to get quite a few steals in his time in with the Cavs, but it's going to come at the expense of some buckets. But that's enough of the not fun stuff. I want to talk about the fun stuff.
Go for it. The
semi-transition above the break hand shovel back to Kevin Love. We're getting three of those a game. He clearly loves setting those up. They're wide open. And as long as Love hits them, those are going to be there for them.
Yeah.
Because teams are disorganized in semi-transition a lot of the time. They're sitting on their heels a little bit, waiting for Rondo to do Rondo things, which is hold the ball. And he's been able to get Kevin quite a few good looks there. Other things I've liked, I think that he's thrown some really nice lobs to the big men, really good entry passes, and kind of helped set them up. But yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be yin-yang experience.
I don't think it's a surprise that he has such good chemistry with Evan Mobley, given all the time he spent playing with Kevin Garnett and Anthony Davis. Like, he's got to feel right at home, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's the same player, am I right? So, yeah, I don't know, man. I've been mostly pretty pleased. I mean, obviously, 8 threes in that first game was kind of silly, but also it's like, bro, sometimes I'm like, how can he not take this?
I think that's some of it, right? Like when you're still kind of getting used to the offense and whatnot, the defender's just laying off you and begging you to shoot it. It's okay, well, someone needs to take these shots. And he's made 6 threes in 3 games with the Cavs, shooting 43%. He only made 8 threes in 18 games with the Lakers. So he's pretty close to his Lakers total for the year. You know, it's been an overall positive. And again, I think the swiftness that Kobe Altman acted with in bringing Rondo in was a big deal. I don't think you get the wins against the Blazers or the Kings without Rondo being able to eat those minutes as good as Brandon Goodwin looked. I just think kind of the slight difference between those two in impact and whatnot, that shows up. And I think the veteran leadership that he's providing, like you already see him really talking to guys in every single break, getting in the refs' ears and whatnot. Like I think all of that experience is really, really valuable and something that adds to the Cavs and helps them on these tough road trips, right? Because you do need guys that have been through this sort of thing that can help you kind of weather the storm. And to have veterans like Kevin Love and Rajon Rondo out there, I think that makes a really big difference.
Yeah. With that said, I do think like the drop off from Rubio is there, and we knew it was going to be there.
Oh yeah,
but like
he's not as good as Rubio. The difference is Ricky Rubio's not a backup point guard. Like he's a starting caliber
point guard,
and this is a backup. And backups in the NBA, there's stuff that they bring to the table, and there's stuff they take off it. That's just reality, right? And that was true with Rubio, just to a much lesser extent. But yeah, it is a downgrade. I am looking forward to Isaac Okoro coming back. I think that he can probably bring some playmaking, and what he was showing right before he went out was really, really exciting. I love the passing off the dribble. I like that Lamar Stevens is stepping up. I appreciate the fact that the Cavs consistently this year have had guys step up when guys go out. I think that needs to be rewarded when those guys come back, where these guys stay in the rotation.
With all that said, though, I mean, I think the drop off to Rondo continues to make clear the need for extra playmaking on this team if they want to make additional noise. You know, how different does the offense look with even a guy like Eric Gordon flanking Garland that can run a secondary pick and roll and pull from three off the dribble and like.
I was lusting over Buddy Hield. I was lusting all damn game. Because, like, Buddy can do a little bit of what even Clay did when he came back. Because Steph had been struggling for, like, a week now. And it was getting a different level of defensive attention. He was wearing down because of all the responsibility he has. It happens to the best point guards. It doesn't just happen to Garland. But, like, that was something that was kind of wearing on him. And the attention that a shooter like a Buddy Hield or Klay Thompson can provide, it changes what defenses do. Like there were times where Jetty Osman was hanging on for his dear life, like face guarding Klay. Lamar Stevens was running for his life going after him. Like it compromises your defense and it does a different thing when you have a shooter like that. And I think it's evident what a difference that would make. Like we talk about the creation that Sexton or Rubio would bring. The creation a spacer like a Buddy Hield or an Eric Gordon can provide is obviously a need for this Cavs team.
A volume spacer.
Mm-hmm. That's the big thing. It's the threat, right? Like it's.
Yeah, I mean, we're about to go watch this team go into Utah, where like someone in our Discord, I forget who, so sorry. They mentioned that the Jazz are a tough matchup for the Cavs because the Cavs' whole conceit based defensively is basically like, yeah, go ahead and try to blow by Darius or Laurie. You'll meet Jared or Evan at the rim. Mm-hmm. And the Jazz are like, no, we'll just take the semi-contested three and we'll take 500 of them. And enough of them will go in that we'll score an F ton of points.
Yeah.
And like the Cavs don't have a lot of those people who can do that for them right now. And I feel like that's really that kind of volume scoring, that kind of reckless shooting almost is an ingredient that this roster could really use as they make a playoff push this year. And so that's the way I feel about the Rondo addition. I think he's been good. I think he has I don't think they need a backup point guard for the rest of the season.
Yep.
Like,
yep.
And there was a world. I wasn't of this opinion. Anyone who listens to this podcast knows how high I was on making this move. But there was a percent chance that at the end of this first couple weeks with Rondo that we said, okay, but we still need a backup point guard because he's an older player. You know, he's near the end of his career, and if he wasn't able to hack it, then they were probably going to have to continue to, and luckily they didn't give up anything to get him, so it wouldn't have been a problem per se, but I do think they've still solved a problem. They just, Ricky filled so many roles for them that they still have a couple more adjustments that need to be made if they want to be the kind of team we thought they could be early in the season.
Yeah, and I'm still of the opinion that I'd like to see them add a playmaker, someone that can handle the ball and initiate some offense. Like, doesn't necessarily have to come at the point guard position, but I definitely do think that Rondo has helped out in a big way. It'll be interesting to see how they play against Utah. Utah is coming off a 5-game road trip where they've lost their last 3 games, including a loss to the Pistons, but they're finally coming home. Hopefully they're not looking at us as a get-right game. I'm sure they are. I'm sure they're happy to be home again, but I don't believe Rudy Gobert is going to be back for that one. So who knows? Maybe the Cavs have a chance. Obviously, them losing to the Pistons gives you a little bit of hope. But at the same time, these are humans, human emotions. Coming off a loss to the Pistons, you're probably going to come out trying to bounce back. So the Cavs will have to spoil the Jazz's hopes of getting a bounce back game in their first game home. I want to thank everyone that's tuning in on YouTube. Make sure you like and subscribe. Click the notification bell so you know when we're going live. Next time we're going to be recording is going to be at 7 Eastern on Thursday. I'm pretty sure I got the date and time right, but I'm not the most reliable. Carter's giving me a thumbs up. That's terrific. If you're listening via podcast, make sure you leave a rating. Leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, or you subscribe and help cook those books. If you want to be part of the Chase Down's exclusive Discord chat, send a screenshot of that review to chasedownpod@gmail.com. However you choose to support us, we really do appreciate it. Make sure you guys are staying safe out there, and until next time, go Cavs.